Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
And on this week's episode, we're talking Chapter 6, The Monster. Well, I do want to make it very clear that we will be, of course, spoiling this episode. This episode will be spoiled. Future episodes will not, because we have not seen future episodes. We're being as disciplined as possible so we can give you an authentic experience as possible in what we're trying to do here, which is cover the show. So, Jessica, what's going on?
It was really, really hard. We watched this episode, episode 6, as soon as we finished the episode 5 podcast, and I have never needed more self-control in my life because I wanted to watch episode 7 so bad.
Yeah, we're really in the home stretch here. We only got 2 more to watch and cover. And then Stranger Things will be put to bed for some time.
I don't want it to end.
I know. It's too bad.
Ever.
It's a good time, though. It was a lot more fun than 11-22-63, though. That was fun to make fun of at one point.
And it did make me cry in the end. So I can only imagine how this show is going to make me feel.
Hopefully it doesn't do that.
This show almost made me cry this episode.
So. I guess we're going to find. Yeah, you cried. Don't pretend like you didn't. All right.
Oh, I don't pretend about my emotions. Good, sir.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to open with some of our initial impressions. We will then get to explicating our way through it. We may have a couple listener comments. We'll wrap with some final thoughts, possibly predictions. And along the way, we're going to spoil. We're going to swear. So if you're easily offended, get the fuck out. We don't want you here because we say bad words sometimes. And we can't help ourselves. We're potty. We're foul. We try to come at you straight. We try not to edit much. And that's what we do. So hopefully you enjoy us. If you're new to us, check out other shows, LibertyStreetGeek.net. That's LibertyStreetGeek.net. We know there's a lot of first-time listeners here because we're getting some iTunes love. We've moved between 15th and 60th place in TV and film, which is nice. So we know we're getting a lot of new ears to our content. If you like this, if you like our style, make sure you check out our other shows. Jessica, like what?
Like our science fiction film podcast.
Yes, that'd be considered our flagship show.
It is. A Game of Thrones podcast, my personal favorite.
That's your on.
There's also a Walking Dead podcast. And briefly, yes. Somewhere hidden in the archives, there may or may not be a True Detective Season 2 podcast.
And there's also an X-Files podcast.
Oh,
which,
yeah, how could I forget?
Which is on hiatus, but we're going to be revisiting some old episodes on that very soon. I've been in talks with one of our hosts, Josh. He's going to be returning. And if you like Stranger Things, you might like X-Files. So definitely go to LibertyStreetGeek.net. If you go to our About section, you'll find our show lineup there. You can see all of our podcasts. You can subscribe. You can have a good time. So
Fear not.
We will not be gone for long. We continually put out an episode every week on science fiction film. So make sure you check that stuff out. All right. Enough of that.
Okay.
Let's hop to this. But probably one last thing before we go.
Sure.
We're recording this live on Mixlr. That's Mixlr.com/LSG-media. MIXLR.com/LSG-media. And on Mixlr, we have a live broadcast. So we're broadcasting this live. So we can't edit too much because we'll get called out for our fuckery. And we also have a room full of people in the chat. And
they're
chatting back and forth. They help us out. They correct us, as Jessica was saying while I was talking. No big deal. And they help us out a lot. It's cool. You know, we forget things. They give us good ideas. We sometimes crowdsource their humor. And they always make the show better. And you can, too, if you just go to Mixlr.com/LSG-media and subscribe to that. And you'll get updates for live shows. And all that stuff's on the website, too. So make sure you check us out. Okay. I just want to first say hello to everybody in chat officially. We did it unofficially before we started recording. There's some new names in there. And I just want to say welcome. I hope you guys are having a good night. Hopefully the LSG faithful are kind to you. I'm sure they will be. They're a pretty cool crowd. And they'll spend most of their time listening to us, laughing at what we say, and laughing at us for what we say, and it will be a good time. Now, we're going to do opening thoughts. So, Jessica, please enlighten me with your opening thoughts on Chapter 6, The Monster, and then we'll get to the episode proper.
This is going to be hard because my opening thoughts are like this. I love everybody in this show. I love everything that happens in this episode.
Qualify.
I love Eleven.
Qualify your love.
I love Nanathan, as I now call them. That's their ship name.
Nobody wants to hear you just say you love people. You got to tell them
why. I know. But that's the point. I can't just tell you why I love everything now because I'll have nothing to say for the rest of the episode.
Well, what are your overall feelings on the episode, the direction they went, some of the choices? High level. You don't have to get specific.
I thought it was pretty phenomenal. I like the fact that we got a lot from Nancy being in the Upside Down and she was able to come out. So that is a possibility. That's incredibly important. It was also super creepy. I like the conspiracy theory with them going to talk to Terry Ives and realizing that Eleven really is her daughter, which is, I think, an important bit of information because this answers a lot of questions. I feel like a lot of questions were answered in this, and I feel like we're really ramping up to some crazy shit in the next two episodes.
It appears that things are going to be coming to a head as we start to clump all of these characters together. And I think that's what we're going to say. But to your point, probably the most exciting moments of this episode, not the most exciting, but perhaps the most thought-provoking moment, is the fact that Nancy was able to escape from the Upside Down, mm-hmm. which is what we're calling it officially. And that's awesome. That is something, that's a new development. We haven't seen anybody escape from it. We know that even...
Other than the monster itself, I guess.
I guess, yeah. So that's a good point. The monster can travel to and fro. So if the monster can do it, maybe somebody else can do it too. And that's pretty awesome. So I'm looking forward to talking about Nancy and what she has going on. I'm looking forward to getting to the incredibly powerful moment surrounding Elle in her hero walk as she saves Mike's ass in the end. Lots to talk about this week as we draw to a close on this season. So without further ado, let's get started with Chapter 6, The Monster.
Do you even remember what happened on the Bloodstone Pass? We couldn't agree on what path to take, so we split up the party, and those trolls took us out one by one, and it all went to shit, and we were all disabled! So we stick together, no matter what.
Yeah, I agree. But this is the party right here in this room.
Elle's one of us now.
No, she's not. Not even close. Never will be. She's a liar, a traitor.
She was just trying to keep us safe. She didn't mean to hurt you. It was an accident.
An accident?
All right, accident or not. Admit it, it was a little awesome.
Awesome?
Yeah, she threw you in the air with her mind.
I could have been killed.
Which is exactly why we need her. She's a weapon. Do you seriously want to fight the Demogorgon with your wrist rocket? That's like R2-D2 going to fight Darth Vader. We're no use to Whale if we're dead.
Okay.
All right.
So Jonathan's calling out for Nancy. Again, what do we see here?
We open up where we left off.
Yes.
Which I fucking love about the show. I can't say how much I love it. Now I realize that is a thing. And it's awesome. I love that they do this.
I like it. I think that this is a trope buster.
Yes.
A lot of shows have gotten away from this, and I don't even know if I want to say a lot because I'm not even watching a lot of shows, but the shows I watch do this, Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, they don't come right back to that cliffhanger usually.
Sometimes they usually
make you wait.
Sometimes they make you wait half a season. Walking Dead.
Yeah. Who's Negan going to kill? I don't know. Who cares?
I don't care.
Well, Jonathan's calling out for Nancy. Cut to Nancy in the Upside Down world. They can hear each other.
I like this.
This is important to note.
I like this a lot, but I like that it's very echoey and very distant.
Yes.
But I like that they can hear each other. I think it's really, really cool.
Right next to you, and you don't even know it. That's something that they said about the Veil of Shadows, or whatever the hell they called it. What did Dustin call it?
I think the Veil of Shadows is what he called
it. Something like that. When he was reading out of that book, it reminded me of this moment where they're
the
right.
The Veil of Shadows, yeah, yes.
They're right next to each other, and they don't even realize it. These scenes generally have a horror feel to them.
For sure.
I like that we come back. I like that we're shooting this forest at night. Anytime you got teenagers in the forest at night and monsters, it's going to be a little bit scary. And not just scary, but revealing. And that's another thing that the show does well. This isn't just cheap horror. This is revealing information about what we've learned so far in the show. And that's, okay, the monster can snatch people up. But now we know that people can escape. So this might mean that there's hope for Barb or Will or both.
Not that deer, though.
Yeah, the deer's fucked.
No hope for the deer.
The deer's fucked. No hope for the deer. And Jonathan finds the tree. Nancy hides up against the tree. I like this moment. We can hear the heavy breathing. It's only lit by the moon. They have their flashlights. And then her hand bursts from the tree. And Jonathan managed to pull her out. Our first Upside Down survivor. Hooray!
It's really creepy. Honestly, when she's hiding from the monster and not sure if it's going to get her. And when Jonathan's trying to find her and he sees the thing in the tree. And that hand coming out. I mean, it really is very, very creepy. And the actress who plays Nancy, whatever her name may be, sorry, I don't remember off the top of my head. She does a great job of seeming genuinely frightened.
Yeah, she's good.
And I think that that continues throughout the episode. And I find Nancy's reaction to everything very realistic, which in most, not most, but in a lot of horror things, people do things and you're like, no. But the way Nancy reacts to this, to me, is very genuine.
It reminds me of the first episode where Will has to retreat to the shed. It's scary like that.
I agree.
Right? Less scary. The rest of the show is less scary. You're more intrigued. At least I am personally by the monster. But I think this is a generally scary moment that takes me back to Will's situation where he has to
in the first
retreat.
Episode, which was scary. There were some genuinely scary moments in the first episode, I think.
We know a lot more now than we did then, so to continue to scare us is impressive.
Oh, Natalia Dyer is the name of the actress who plays Nancy. Thank you, Andrew Gaskin, in the chat.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Gaskin.
I like her, even though she needs to eat a hamburger because she's the skinniest human being I've literally ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Needs a sandwich for sure.
I mean, my God. Yeah. Her arms are like toothpicks.
Yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable just looking at her.
Well, trying to be me too mean to her. She might have a disorder. Okay?
I'm sorry. It's just an eating disorder, but she needs to eat a hamburger.
Extra cheese. Double stack that bitch. Get some fries.
Bacon on there. Cheesy fries.
Yep.
Ooh, now I'm hungry.
Load it up.
And I will never have toothpicks like Nancy.
Yeah. We get right to the opening credits. So this first sequence is a little shorter than some of the prior ones. And we cut right to Steve and company driving around. And Steve's friends don't really give a shit about his feelings. They actually openly mock him. He climbs up to Nancy's window and sees her with Jonathan. So this is not good.
Now, we all know about my feelings about Steve and how last episode I liked him. And I was like, oh, he's actually a nice guy. And at this point, too, I'm still like, you know what? Steve's a nice guy. He's worried about Nancy. He's going to her house because he's worried about her. Because his friends are making fun of him. They're like, oh, Steve's in love. And Steve's like, no, she was acting weird. Something is wrong. He genuinely seems concerned for Nancy. So at this point, I'm still like, okay, Steve is not a shitbag.
All right, so I'm going to jump in right here so we can argue immediately. We're only 5 minutes into this, 12 minutes in.
Good, because I want to hate Steve, so you just tell me.
Okay, so here's what you do. You judge the person based off their last action rather than the sum of their entirety. So when Steve is being like this, you're like, Steve is awesome, he's amazing. And then when he's bad, he's a shitbag.
Yes.
Which might give people insight into your personal relationships with people.
True.
That if they say the right thing at the right time, despite their history, you'll think they're wonderful. And despite how much good they've done, if they say the wrong thing, you hate them. So that's just Steve getting the regular Jessica treatment.
Oh, exactly.
Okay.
100%.
You understand that you're choosing, you're choosing a very hard life for yourself. And I just want to warn you.
I'm going to be who I'm going to be, and this is it.
Introducing the Jessica Gets Some Counseling podcast, breaking in on the Stranger Things podcast. We'll be back in a minute with the Hawkins Report. We're going to get right into Jessica and her issues. So, Jessica, tell me about the guy that hurt you.
Steve's all right now in my mind. I'm like, oh, he's concerned for Nancy. But then we see Nancy and Jonathan together. And let's remember that despite the fact that sometimes I don't hate Steve, I ship Nancy and Jonathan so hard.
Ship them, huh?
I can't even tell you. I'm literally obsessed with them. I want to write fan fiction about them.
You beat me to the punch. You beat me to the punch.
I should write fan fiction and just post it on the website.
Jessica writes hot, steamy high school sex fan fiction, and she's 30.
No, none of that. Do you think do you think if I wrote Nancy and Jonathan fan fiction that Matthew would let me be on the Unknown Words podcast?
He might. So, Jessica, tell me, what were you thinking when you wrote this scene? You know what they need to do, though? If I had a teenage daughter, I for sure wouldn't have that rape ladder that leads up to her window.
Yeah, honestly, it's true. It's too easy for men to just climb.
I do not like Nancy's rape ladder. And I think her father, when he is not choking the life out of runaways and wearing fucking Barbara's hair on his head while he fucking trolls the city streets, the red light district, looking for marks and victims, he should probably work on the rape ladder because it's bumming me out.
I just listened to a murder podcast, and like every time I talk to the murderer, I picture Mr. Wheeler, even though I know the guy looks nothing like him. And I was like, this is my life now.
Yeah.
I see serial killers as Mr. Wheeler.
Yeah, I think so. We move over to Joyce and Hopper, who spend the entire episode together.
Like lovers do.
Like lovers do. Hopper tells Joyce he saw a lab, a place for experiments. He mentions the kids' room, a drawing, a stuffed animal. He notes it said 11. Joyce asks if the drawing was good. He said it was stick figures. I don't know how. Hopper recounts Earl's testimony. A kid with a shaved head with Benny. I pressed him, but it might not have been Will. Terry Ives comes up, and they wonder if it was her kid. So let's talk about this scene.
Oh, my God. So much to say in between everything that you just said.
Well, we set the scene, and now we can talk about it.
The fact that we already know Hopper told Joyce literally everything. Everything.
Mm.
He was not worried that anything he said was going to sound crazy to her. He was not worried. He could not trust her.
Yes.
He immediately tells her everything.
Good observation.
I love these two interacting. I also like the fact that when he describes this drawing. And he's like, I don't know, it's like a kid's drawing. We don't know how old his daughter was when she passed away or anything like that. But Joyce immediately has her Will the Wise drawing. Will was a good artist. The drawing isn't his.
Right.
There's more to this.
Yes. And that's why he goes on about maybe this kid that Earl talked about wasn't in fact him. And it's funny that you would think that Joyce might, there's an excitement that builds at the end of the scene, but you would think Joyce might almost take this as a downer, like, oh, it's not my kid.
And I like this a lot about, I like a lot of the things, the optimism that Joyce has in this, even where they're kind of feeling down on the situation. Yeah. At the end, when Hopper turns around, he's like, hey, Terry Ives' daughter just showed up, sure. You know, Will could show up too. I like the fact that despite everything that makes it seem crazy throughout this episode, that Hopper's still like, no, we saw Jane and we're going to find Will. It's connected. I love this about them. I love the intrigue. And I like that they're going down this path and that they're going in the right direction. And even though it seems like they're not almost, Hopper's still convinced they are and he's right. And I love it.
His conviction is awesome.
And I like this Terry Ives' daughter stuff. I really do. So
Nancy takes a shower and she starts immediately being plagued with flashbacks of her event in the Upside Down. Jonathan unfurls the sleeping bag on the floor and he's kind of awkwardly asking if this is okay. Obviously, Nancy says she doesn't want to be alone, neither does Jonathan, and they get to their respective beds. I love how Jonathan sleeps with a pistol, a man after my own heart.
Me too.
And a long silence, and then she just says, can you please come up? Can you just come up here?
Can you just come up here?
And he does.
It's adorable. I'm obsessed with them. What else can I say?
Yeah,
I'm obsessed with them.
Hopefully, you get on Matt's show.
And this is, oh my God, and I love this part too, let me tell you. I'm like a schoolgirl right now. I'm smiling. I'm so excited. This is what I love, okay? So she's in bed and he gets up in bed with her and she
pulls out his dong. No, oh, Jesus.
No, she's under the covers and he sleeps on top of the covers because he's respectful. It's so fucking cute. I can't even. Oh, my God. I want to write teen romance novels more than anything right now.
Yeah. You'll be okay.
It's adorable. I'm sorry.
It is pretty adorable.
It's very respectful. Jonathan is a great human being. Do you think Steve would have slept on top of the covers? No, because Steve is a douche. We'll get there.
So, Jonathan, you know, they get into the bed with the lights on. Jonathan tells her that it can't get us here, and she says, we don't know that. We quickly see Mike playing with a Rubik's Cube, having a little meltdown, kicking his room apart.
Kicking L's area apart. Specifically,
yes. And, of course, that makes sense. You know, Mike's going through a very emotional thing. He's a kid. He can't really... He has an underdeveloped brain, for Christ's sakes. He's a child. He doesn't know how to wrap his head around this stuff. We move right over to Hopper getting Terry Ives' info, and then he and Joyce head over to visit.
Yeah, they do.
Now, Jonathan wakes up at Nancy's place. She's already awake doing research in books. She couldn't sleep. He kept seeing the thing. She notes the creature. And this right here really warms my adventurous spirit for kids' movies heart. The fact that she's doing research in a book... And in a book, by the way, no fucking internet, no Google shit, no phones, right?
I don't know why she has this book with the drawings.
She probably has a goddamn encyclopedia, like people
She's
did
looking
back
it
in
up,
the day.
Yeah. Oh my God, my grandmother still has a collection of encyclopedias. Every time I go over her house, I'm like, what is this?
There used to be door to door encyclopedia salespeople.
Oh, I know. God. It's crazy.
Hope you got out of that career.
I used to like want one, and now I'm like, why did I want an encyclopedia? Like, I thought that would make me seem smart.
Right before the internet like went bonkers, there was this book called Video Hound, and it was essentially like the printed version of IMDb. It was the greatest book ever.
I've never heard of
it. Oh, it's amazing. If you Google Video Hound, it's like a manual. It was the most amazing thing ever. When I used to work in bookstores, we sold it, and I bought it every year, every edition. It was the best thing ever, and it was like the most They still make it. It was like a rabbit hole of book. And it was awesome. I should buy one just for fun.
Yeah, Video Hound, yes. 2016.
Floyd Fry knows what I'm talking about in the chat. He said four bones. Yeah, they'd rate stuff in bones.
Golden Movie Retriever. Oh my God, I'm sold. It's about dogs. Not really, but there are dogs in it, which is adorable.
All right, let's keep moving.
All right, I got really excited.
So Jonathan wakes up at Nancy's place. She's already awake doing the research. Now, she notes the creature in question.
Mm-hmm.
And they come up with a couple of things here. They come up with...
Well, Nancy, really. Jonathan just
It knocks. Lives there. It feeds there. And that means if Will and Barbara, she sort of trails off. Jonathan tells Nancy that his mom talked to Will, which is revealing. He tells Nancy that if Will is alive, Barbara could be too. Nancy wants to find out. I love how she's brave. She notes it's a predator. It hunts at night. It's a solo hunter like a bear.
But first, hunts at night like a lion or coyote.
Yep.
It's always alone like a bear.
She also notes that, like a shark, it can detect blood from a quarter mile, I believe, is the distance.
Yeah, I believe Jamie Lomas compared this creature to a shark in either a comment or his blog, too, before this episode. So,
nice.
Gotta throw that out there.
A theory that they can test. If it works, at least we'll know it's coming. And then the door rattles.
I know.
I love the meta joke here by Jonathan.
Me too.
The door rattles. It is Nancy's mom. They're startled. They grasp hands. It's cute. Jessica gets the vapors.
My God, you don't even know.
Jonathan notes that Nancy's mom doesn't knock, and so did everyone else watching this. What parent on the planet goes, it just shakes the thing to scare the shit out of their kids?
Probably most of them. I don't know. Maybe she's like,
put that magic wand away, honey.
All I know is...
put it under the mattress.
Honey,
shut it off. I can hear it. I know it's not your back rubber.
I know I'm normally known for liking men of the Jeff Goldblum, Jorah Mormont age range, but I really think I have a crush on Jonathan.
You heard it here first, folks. Has a crush on a sophomore in high school.
I mean, in real life, he's probably like 40. Come on.
All right. But if I said I had a crush on Nancy, I would be getting carried out of here in fucking handcuffs.
She's very skinny, honestly, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah, she looks skinny.
It's okay for women to date high school men, right?
I concur.
Unless you're like Mary Kay Letourneau, then you go to jail.
Yeah. Is that your hero? Don't you have her poster?
Yeah. Listen, she's married to that bro now and has kids with him. So
she has that poster right on the closet door to all the fanfic she's written about high school sex.
I hope it's really Mary Kay Letourneau, and I'm not using her with somebody else. Sorry. Dean wants to murder me.
State assassin lady goes to see Scott Clark.
Oh, yeah. Scott Clark.
A bogus story about the newsletter, technology development for kids. She's trying to find out where these kids are. Do you know of any kids that would want to participate? And Mr. Mustache says, I sure do. I have a few in mind.
I kind of feel bad about all the times that I said Mr. Clark was evil and a bad guy, because now that I know this bitch from Brenner's lab is going to his house to get information, I know he's actually not a bad guy. Like, he's still maybe a pedophile and he still may murder people, but he's not a bad guy. And I called that lady a bitch like 3 times in my notes about
El
the scene.
Price. Nice. So Mike and Dustin talk. Mike assures that Elle was trying to protect him. It wasn't her fault. It was Lucas's. But Dustin says, no, no, no. It was everyone's fault. Okay, everybody was out of line. You're all being a bunch of assholes. Dustin reminds Mike the rule of the law. And he says, you need to extend a hand to Lucas. That's the rule of the law. It doesn't matter if you think you're right or wrong. That's the way it goes. And Dustin says, we're going to get Lucas. And then we're going to go find 11. Dustin is the man.
I agree.
This kid has grown on me immensely. You know what I love about this show? This is another thing this show does, is it makes me realize that they're not going to go in a direction that I thought they were going to go in. And I say that because Dustin could have seemed like the geeky sort of kid who is there for comic relief. And although he's funny, we also see that he has this wisdom to him that is this glue for these kids.
Which continues in his later conversations with Mike, too.
Yes,
I mean, they're great. He's a really smart kid, and he's so observant. In this moment where Mike is trying to stick up for Elle, and Dustin's like, everyone is out of line except me. And you know what? Dustin is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was out of line except him.
You know what I worry about with these kids? Like in 6-7 years when we read a newspaper article about how they got pulled over with like a fucking gang of coke in their closet or
what,
in their
like
trunk.
Freaking that idiot from Star Wars.
Yeah, I just worry about them. I hope they have good parents and they get taken care of, these little guys. All right.
They're just going to be in Stephen King's It and be afraid of clowns forever. It's going to be
let's
fine.
Talk about the lab flashback.
The rule of law.
The rule of law.
So, that was the last scene, sorry.
Right. Lab flashback. Brennan tells 11 that today is special.
He gives her a present, some fucking flowers I would give my grandma for Mother's Day.
Yeah, well, he's kind of out of touch with human
clearly
feelings.
Clearly, what the fuck?
This guy's basically an android.
Here's a little fucking flower plant I was going to give my grandma. I'm going to give it to you instead.
Yeah.
Loser.
Today we make history. Today we make contact. Cut to 11 in the woods alone, dirty and hungry. She puts her wig back on, looks down at her own reflection, gets upset.
Like, this ain't me, motherfuckers.
Blasts some mind bullets and disrupts the water, and a bunch of crows take flight. Talk to me. Got anything to say here?
I just think it's interesting. Again, this is commentary on Elle. Is Elle was so excited about being like a normal girl and wearing the blonde wig and being pretty and all this stuff. And then when she sits and she looks at herself in the water after everything that's happened with the wig on, she takes it off. It's not her. Like, she's pretending to be someone
I like
she's
it.
Not. her wearing this wig and the things that she does, it's all very symbolic to me.
I agree.
And she's not this little, you know, weapon like Brenner has made her, but she's not a normal girl either. And I don't remember who linked to the article or who commented about it, but the actress, that when they wanted her to shave her head, she didn't at first, and they showed her like Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, cool.
I believe that's who it was. Or no, they showed maybe Charlize Theron with a shaved head. I don't remember.
Anyway, the point is.
But anyways, it's you know, a similar type of,
Start over.
It's just this similar idea. A little girl in real life, this actress is like, I don't want to be this, you know, be bald. I'm a girl.
Right.
And I bet she was able to bring a lot of her own feelings to, you know, accepting who she is. And she's going to use her powers for good, basically.
Sure.
Elle realizes that these people want to use her as a weapon. They want her to do these certain things, but she can also use those things for good, I guess.
I like it. And there is a bit of a sad irony here where it is, like you said, she is not, in fact, this little girl in a dress and a wig. And right. Her appearance, her very costume in this entire episode is reminding us of that. Little kids don't eat boxes of Eggos in the woods alone. They don't have mind powers. They don't get treated like this. And you start to feel for her a little here when she gets mad at her own reflection. And it goes back to the old Superman quote from Kill Bill, which is, you know, Batman has to put on a costume to be Batman, but Superman is always Superman. He has to put on a costume to be Clark Kent. And it's like this, you can't deny who you are, kid, type of thing. The wig doesn't help. The dress doesn't help. You are this thing. And I think this is a pivotal moment in her character, because what we need to do now is see how her growth arc pans out and what ultimately her fate will be. Will she be able to be reintegrated into society as quote unquote normal? Or will she not, and meet a tragic, maybe not necessarily a death, but a tragic end where she does get confiscated by the government and employed as a weapon and pulled away and never to see her friends again? And I wonder how it's going to go down, but I do think that this is a pivotal moment where she realizes her nature, and she has decided, as you said, to make a decision to use her powers for good and not for the whims of the government to do these other things. And I think that that's brilliant.
Me too.
The Wheelers eat breakfast without Nancy. Mom goes to get her, but Nancy has split. By the way, rookie move, Nancy, leaving the sleeping bag out.
Nancy, total what are you thinking? Jonathan didn't even move. Although honestly, I don't know, should her mom be glad that perhaps a boy slept on the floor as opposed to
that's
in her bed? So maybe it was a good idea.
Yeah, not a bad, no, that's true.
Also,
how would you write it if you wrote this fan fiction?
Well,
no, seriously, would you have wrote, would the sleeping bag have been there or not in your book?
No, but there would have been tussled sheets and like a guy's pair of pants on the bed.
What the fuck? This is high school. There would have been 10 condoms on the fucking floor. It would have smelled like sweat and sex.
And I do want to just be honest with everyone listening to this podcast that I Googled the actor who plays Jonathan. His name is Charlie Heaton, and he's 22. Oh, my God. Why is he only 22? Anyway, what the fuck is with Nancy's mom? Picks her lock and breaks into her room.
What is she, like a geisha girl assassin? She just pulls lock-picking tools out of her hair? What else is up there? A goddamn 22 Derringer?
It was a bobby pin. You can pick a door.
Yeah.
I think it was a bobby pin, but still.
In the chat, John David says boxers hanging on the bed.
Yeah, they would be. Like, Jonathan was like, shit, I don't even have time to put my underwear back on. We gotta go.
What's this under the bed? A box of extra large magnums? Oh, Nancy, you're too small for that. All right, ready?
Oh, my God. I'm ready. I've been ready.
Mike and Dustin go to Lucas's place. Mike offers his hand as he's supposed to. He admits, listen, I drew first blood. Lucas lets them in. He says that he will shake on one condition. We forget about the weirdo and go straight to the gate.
Mm-hmm.
She's not part of this party. And Mike's like, no fucking way. Well, he doesn't say that. He's like, no way.
He tries to say that Elle is one of them.
Yeah. Dustin says, do you remember the Bloodstone path? Remember when we couldn't agree on which way to go? We split up and the trolls killed us.
I love this child so much.
He's so brilliant.
He's so smart that he relates it to this game that means so much to them, but it really does relate to all of this. This is adorable.
Hey, I learned a lot of life lessons role playing.
I want all of these children to be the children in the It remake, and I don't even care who else is cast. I want them out, and I only want the cast from this movie in.
I'll tell you, if the if they are able to recreate this type of magic with whatever cast they come up with, it'll be good stuff.
I'm so excited about that movie. I can't even tell you. I can't even get off on this tangent because...
Because I won't allow it. Yeah, the podcast is going great. Then they talked about Stephen King's It for 3 hours.
Listen, sometimes podcasts go off on tangents, okay?
Yeah, and they get no downloads. We're not them. All right, we can tangent a little, but we don't want to get too off the path. All right, okay. We couldn't agree on what path, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Mike says, we need her. She's a weapon. Lucas continues to call her a traitor. He's going to the gate to find Will. So
yeah,
Lucas is a tough
sell. Waste
your
own time on L.
Well, Lucas is a tough sell. I like this. Eleven goes to the store to get some waffles for free with her powers.
Yeah, obviously.
This is cut with her trip to the bath to make contact. We learned, Brenner tells her not to worry about all the scientists who are looming. He tells her that it can't hurt her, not from here. That was interesting to note. So whenever she does this type of interdimensional astral projection...
Says Brenner.
What does he really know, right?
What the fuck?
How about you going there, pal?
Can I just make one comment about the grocery store scene? When she's in the grocery store and the guy's like, where's your mom? Is she here? Where's your dad? And Elle just looks at him and she goes, mouth breather.
Yeah.
And then she walks away. This is adorable.
It's awesome.
This show is so well written and so well directed.
Why is that?
It's unbelievable. Because this stupid little inside joke that we have from episodes ago where Mike had to explain to her what a mouth breather is, and now she's taken that term to heart and she is using it in turn.
It's good stuff.
It's so sweet.
It's endearing as hell.
There's something very, very special about this show, and I don't have another word to describe it. It's just very special.
Good stuff. She appears in the black space, I call it. Back in the present, a store worker asks her about her parents.
The mouth breather.
Yep. She takes a gang of waffles. The employees call the police. She leaves without paying.
Slam some doors, break some shit with her mind.
With her mind. Hopper and Joyce go to see Terry Ives. They meet her sister. Terry is essentially a mushy brain at this point. She's mush, mush brains. And she sits there like a fucking hump.
Yeah.
And Joyce tells her about Will. No response. Hopper asks her about Brenner. She looks at the image of Will. So we know she's not totally... She has alertness.
Right. I'm iffy on my feelings about Terry Ives.
Well, explain, because I am too, actually.
Do
you think she's faking?
No, not necessarily. There's just something about this that I'm not 100% sure if I like it. I like that we're communicating with Terry's sister and not Terry, because then we're not getting from Terry's point of view. We're getting it from a skeptic's point of view, as opposed to Terry, who'd be like, I believe you. I'm with you. Like, let me go with you and do all this shit. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But like the idea of her being comatose and being there and her sister taking care of her to me seems a little, I don't know. I don't love it. Like I almost wish Terry was dead, to be honest with you, and they found her sister instead.
Wow.
I know that sounds awful, but because what's going to happen is she's going to get Elle back at the end of the show and she's going to fucking wake up from her comatose state and be like, oh.
That's possible.
Because if that happens, I'll kill myself because that would be the worst writing of all time.
Just a quick note as we record this live, we seem to be having problems with Mixlr. So I apologize to everybody in the chat, but we're going to press on. Unfortunately, we can't stop the show.
We are having problems with Mixlr?
Yeah, I'm trying to send a message. It won't send and blah, blah, blah. But
I'm not having problems.
Spend too much time talking about that. Unfortunately, the feed seems to not be working.
Someone in the chat says the actress who plays Terry doesn't have legs. Is that true?
What?
Someone Google that shit.
Well, there you go.
I guess I'll Google it.
All right. So I think in other words, you're concerned about the Terry Ives direction.
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. I'm fine with, like, they did these experiments and, like, or even, like, if she went crazy, was in a psych ward because no one believed her. Like Terminator. Like, you know what I mean? We put Sarah Connor in the psych ward because no one believes her.
Okay, yep,
I'd almost rather see Terry Ives be of sound mind, but they think that, not of sound mind, but you know what I mean? Be able to speak, but everybody thinks she's crazy. She's in the psych ward because of all these experiments with drugs they did, and that they have to communicate with a sister, not with Terry directly, because of the fact that them talking to a skeptic is important as part of this, that they're not talking directly to Terry. That I like. I like that they're communicating with a sister and not Terry. I think that that is the correct direction to go. But her being comatose with a sister, I don't know. There's just something about it that feels weird to me and that I kind of just don't love. That's all.
It feels like X-Files to me. This is such a Mulder and Scully moment.
Yeah.
They go to the house and the sister's like, well, he's been like that forever. And then the investigation gets a little bit deeper and government conspiracies. This striked me as very X-Files. But we're going to get to, we'll come back to them.
Oh my God, she doesn't have legs. Sorry.
Okay. We'll come back to them. That's no big deal.
Do you want me to tell you that though?
Okay. Good to know. Let's not treat her like a fucking...
Well, I'm just like saying, I didn't know. She's born with a medical condition that resulted in the amputation of both of her lower legs. Fibular hemimelia.
Which is crazy. Bones. I was born with three legs. Know what I mean?
And as a result, both of her legs were amputated when she was 1 year old.
There you go.
And she's gorgeous. Wow. That's fascinating.
It's crazy how somebody born that way could be pretty.
No, not that she's pretty. She is very pretty because she's a fucking actress. If she was ugly and she had no legs, she probably wouldn't be an actress. But
she'd just be ugly with no legs.
Yeah, exactly. Just like when you're ugly, you just live your regular life. But that's just, I don't know, that's interesting to me. Shit like that is interesting to me, okay?
There you go. Interesting, she says. Lucas. We'll come back to them when they start talking about MK Ultra.
Oh, good, because I have a lot to say about that.
We'll talk about Lucas, because Lucas gets prepared for some battle. This
is adorable, too.
Floyd Fry pointed this out in his comment on Facebook. This is very much like Lost Boys.
Mm-hmm.
The Frog Brothers tying their headbands on, getting on their bikes, loading up their gear. It's exactly what this is. Exactly what this is. And it's awesome. No nonsense. And he sees the weirdo in the fan.
Not like the weirdo L.
And by fan, I mean van.
And by weirdo, you mean some dude with a mustache who looks like he's a pedophile.
Roger that. Yep. And he pedals past him on his mission.
Oh, hello, Mr. Pedophile. Nice to see you, sir.
Mike and Dustin ride. Dustin teaches Mike about jealousy. This is a good scene.
Oh, my gosh. About it? Yes. Dustin is an incredible, very self-aware little boy, and it's very sweet. He explains to Mike that Lucas is jealous of Elle because Lucas and Mike are best friends. And when Mike tries to protest, Dustin's like, no, no, no. I didn't move here till the fourth grade, and you and Lucas live closer together. I get it. You know, so you guys are best friends, but now this girl arrives and lives in your basement, and you're devoting all your attention to her. And I like that Mike's response is that, no. Yes, Lucas is my best friend, but Dustin, you're my best friend too, and so is Will. Like, I like that. I appreciate that from these kids. But I appreciate the, I don't know, adultness of Dustin.
It's very mature, and I do like how Dustin says, you know, you guys, there's this thing. And this is, I love the awareness of this kid, because everybody knows somebody. Or should I say, everybody knows two people, be it, you know, romantic or friendship, who have this happen to them.
Oh, everybody
knows what's going on. Nobody says anything. And then they fight. Like a couple of zero intelligence goblins.
Right. But this is like such a common feeling when you're a kid in elementary school. But even as an adult, I think people still sometimes get this feeling where you have a friend who's like your best friend. And then they get a new friend that they like all the time. Like, I have a friend who you know who I'm talking about. And she asked me to be a bridesmaid in her wedding. And her old friends literally wanted to murder me because I was the new friend. So I was shitty. So yeah. I guess I was L in this scenario and I have superpowers. But anyways, that shit happens even to grown-ass humans.
Yeah.
But kids can explain it in a way that's so simple. And I don't know, it's just, Dustin's awesome.
Right. And I think my perspective was less that and more Dustin's, where it's like you see two friends not getting along because they refuse to communicate. And I know that feeling, and it's so frustrating to observe. And you're just like, ugh, just talk, you idiots. Mm-hmm. You idiots. Anyway, Mike does call bull on Dustin, though, for friend logic, which I like. I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they see the disturbance at the grocery store, and they know exactly what that means.
And we see someone watching them from the woods.
Back at the Ives residence, we talk MK Ultra, conspiracies, Illuminati.
Black helicopters?
Yep. Animal masks, orgies, and Project MK Ultra. It's got a huge Wikipedia article on it.
Oh, it's a real thing?
There's declassified MK Ultra documents. I'll just read the first paragraph from Wiki. It says, sometimes referred to as the CIA's mind control program, was the codename given to an illegal program of experiments on human subjects designed and undertaken by the United States CIA. Experiments on humans were intended to identify and develop drugs and procedures to be used in interrogations and torture in order to weaken the individual to force confession through mind control. Organized through the Scientific Intelligence Division of the CIA, the project coordinated with the Special Operations Division of the U.S. Army Chemical Corps. The program began in the early 50s, was officially sanctioned in 53, was reduced in scope in 64, further curtailed in 67, and officially halted in 73. The program engaged in many illegal activities, including the use of unwitting U.S. and Canadian citizens as test subjects, which led to controversy, as the Brits say, regarding its legitimacy. MKUltra used numerous methodologies to manipulate people's mental states and alter brain function, including the surreptitious administration of drugs, especially LSD and other chemicals, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, isolation, verbal and sexual abuse, as well as various forms of torture. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
I gotta tell you something right now. I did not know this was a real thing. And I have to close down the Wikipedia article because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to go down a rabbit hole for hours tonight when I'm done podcasting about this. I am immediately obsessed with this thing. And I can't even tell you. This is fascinating. I can't believe it's a real thing. I cannot wait to spend hours on Wikipedia tonight.
So Terry took some drugs.
LSD.
Apparently they paid her for this. They threw in some ISO tanks, expand the boundaries of the mind. They didn't force her, so they say, but she didn't know she was pregnant at the time. Whoopsie. Joyce asks for pictures of 11. Terry's sister says that miscarried miscarried at some point.
Third trimester.
Thank you, but thinks she is still alive, meaning Elle, with special powers. You guys read Stephen King?
Oh my God. I'm sorry. This show is such an homage to Stephen King as a whole. I love the fact that they're just like, and this is something that Stephen King does in his books. If you read Stephen King, Stephen King will reference himself. Like, I forget what book it is, and they're talking about somebody, and they're like, oh my God, it's like that movie Carrie. It's a Stephen King book where he's referencing a movie about one of his other books. That's something that Stephen King does. And I know his universes are interconnected, yes, but he also references his own work as work, which is something that I love that he does. And this show, which is so clearly inspired by Stephen King and pays so many homages to him, I like that they're just flat out like, hey, you read Stephen King? Yeah, we do too, obviously. But we're just going to throw it out there.
In the chat, they're saying Millie Bobby Brown is a good singer, too. I guess she has a YouTube channel. Of course, she's the actress that plays 11, right?
She's the most amazing person in the world.
How the fuck did she come up with Millie Bobby Brown? Bobby Brown? Like the R&B singer from like the late 80s, early 90s?
It's not her fault.
Somebody look that up in the chat. Get back to me. All right. Telepathy, telekinesis, mind bullets, Kyle. They stole her.
You can do with your mind.
They stole her baby away to make her a weapon. Joyce and Hopper ask about the validity of the claims. They start to discuss that this definitely could have been covered up based on what they've seen so far. And then, of course, we cut to Lucas getting to the perimeter, and we move back to Jonathan and Nancy in a great scene accompanied by Dolly Parton music where they're shopping. This is classic.
Let's talk more about the Terry Ives stuff first, though, before we get ahead of ourselves. Just in general, I think this shit is so fascinating and so important. I like this idea that this is, yes, it's this supernatural thing that's happening, but at the same time, they're giving us an actual logical explanation that they performed these experiments on Terry Ives while she was pregnant. Then she had this baby with special powers, so they took the baby and made it look like the baby never existed. Everything that Terry Ives believes is true because we know 11 exists, and obviously we know 11 is Jane.
Yep.
And I love that none of this turns Hopper off. He still believes it.
Sure.
And I also like Becky, who's Terry's sister, her reaction, which is like, you and Terry would have gotten along.
Yeah, and based off of Hopper's experience thus far with the Hawkins lab, we know that a government conspiracy is clearly something he believes in. He's been actively battling against a government cover-up right now. So he's not going to not believe the Ives story about MKUltra stuff.
Right. It's just an interesting thing. I like that we use Becky as our narrator, not Terry, because if they meet up with Terry and Terry's like, they took my daughter, this is what happened, I can tell you all of these things. I was pregnant, they lied and said I miscarried, they did this, they did that, they took my kid. Then you have Terry telling the story. When we have Becky, who is a skeptic and just thinks her sister is fucked up.
Sure.
We're still getting that little bit of, even though we know that 11 is Jane and we know that Terry's right and Becky's wrong, but it's important to still have that skepticism in the story.
I like it.
It can't be so easy. We need our characters. We need Hopper and Joyce to believe beyond what people are telling them. We need them to still stand strong in what they believe, despite the fact that they're being told, like, no, this child was never born.
Good stuff. I completely agree. Great observation.
I love the scene. I love the conspiracy theory. It's really interesting to me.
Let's talk about our bear trap gas can, 38 rounds, chains, lighter fluid, normal shit that high school kids buy.
Still ship them.
In 83.
Yeah, he just buys bullets and the guy's like, so what are you kids doing? What are you kids doing with all this? Nancy, monster hunting.
Last week, I was shopping for a new top that I thought Steve might like.
It took a whole weekend, her and Barb.
And now she's talking about shopping with Jonathan Byers. To buy bear traps. And she wonders how weird it is. And Jonathan says something like, what's more weird, the fact that you're doing with me? What does he say?
He says, what's the weirder part, or what's weirder, the bear traps or Jonathan Byers?
There you go.
And she says, definitely you. It's cute. They're flirting.
Yeah.
It's adorable. I'm obsessed with them.
Some kids drive, but you're more obsessed with telling us you're obsessed about them than you are actually obsessed with them, I think.
That's not true.
Okay. So the kids drive by, ask Nance about seeing her movie. They can't wait to see it. Now we get some panic setting in on poor Nancy. She runs to see on the box office scrawled, Nancy the Slut Wheeler coming at you at 7 p.m.
All the right moves, which is, again, this
yes.
harkens back to our conversation with Steve the night before, where Steve said, let's go see All the Right Moves with your boyfriend in it. And she said, no, she's staying home, whatever. She's going to be with her brother. But in Steve's mind, she was banging Jonathan. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
They find Steve and Co. chilling in an alleyway, and she smashes Steve in the face. Steve was worried. Nancy admits that he came by. Obviously, from Steve's perspective, it's pretty bad. There's a dude in your girlfriend's bedroom at night.
And I want to comment on this,
took
too.
The rape ladder.
I want to, because even at this point with Nancy the Slut Wheeler, we then move on to them in the alleyway. And the person doing the spray painting is Tommy, not Steve.
Of course.
Right? So it wasn't Steve, which I'm going to assume that it wasn't Steve who spray painted that either, that it was also Tommy.
Yeah.
And Steve is a participant. He's watching them do it, so he's an asshole. But at least he's not actively doing this shit himself.
Right.
And when I really hate him is when he starts to shit with fucking Jonathan. Right. I will not stand for him making fun of my 22-year-old boyfriend like that.
Well, it makes sense that a very hurt teenage boy would lash out.
No, I hate him.
And try to hurt. I think he should be lined up against the wall with the other criminals, and he should be shot. He should be executed by firing squad, and I think we should charge his family for the price of the round, okay? That's what I think should happen to Steve. He needs to be executed publicly so no other children get angry with other children and say mean things. Jesus Christ, what are you, North Korea?
If you're called a slut in high school, it's really fucking bad.
Yeah, well, what do you do?
Like, at age 30, I'm like, they called her a slut, no big deal.
So, obviously, he goads Jonathan because he's mad, he's hurt. Jonathan slugs him in the fucking mouth, which I appreciate.
And I would like to point out some of the shit that Steve says. He says that he thought Jonathan was a queer. He comes from a house full of screw-ups, just like his dad. Just pushing. No wonder why your brother's gone, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Just going at him. Because all he wants is for Jonathan to punch him so he can beat the shit out of Jonathan.
Which doesn't go well for him.
Yeah, because Jonathan's like, oh, you thought I was this quiet little dude just taking sex pictures of your girlfriend? No, there's a lot of pent-up anger in here about my missing brother and my douchebag father and the fact that everyone thinks I'm queer, so I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
100%. I'm telling you, man, you watch out for the fucking quiet kid that's got all that fucking years of rage built up. So anyway, the cops show up because he's beating the brakes off him, and Jonathan hits a cop, which is bad
accidentally.
News.
Yeah. Accidentally.
By the way, biggest pussy cop of all time. Giant puss wagon. Oh, a fucking 115-pound kid. Wow, I'm the shittiest cop ever. Anyway, he gets arrested for that, obviously.
Even though at first Dean's like, why is this kid getting arrested? In 2016, he probably would have been shot.
Wow. I actually didn't see him hit the cop. But when I did, I thought, okay, that's probably why they're dragging him in. But anyway, Jonathan hits a cop, gets arrested, and Nancy cries a little. But tries to stifle her fucking huge smile at the boys fighting over her. I know all about Nancy. She ain't fooling me. She's like, I'm so sad. I love it when they
fight for me. The hottest guy in school and a guy who took my nude pictures are fighting over me.
Well, we saw this coming. And I think this is going to directly play into Hopper and Joyce. They're going to end up back with Jonathan. I think we're going to start getting people together for these final two episodes.
I can't wait because I'm going to watch the next one.
So let's talk about Hopper and Joyce. They leave. Not many more answers. So they don't really get much.
But they do in a way, I feel like. Okay. I feel like this is really inspiring to Hopper. He's like, we're going to find him. We are close.
Right, but no real evidence.
But he is, with no question in his mind, certain that the girl at Benny's Diner was Jane.
Right.
And the fact if 12 years later, Joyce is down on this. She's like, this lady's been waiting 12 years.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And Hopper's like, no, the girl at that diner was Jane. If after 12 years we see Jane, then we're going to find Will. Right. And he's like, there's a chance, and I would give anything for a chance.
There you go.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
There's so many couples in the show that I just love.
So Hopper gets the fight call, which he immediately dismisses, which I appreciate because he doesn't give a shit about a fist fight.
Right. Oh, 100%.
I love that. And then they move right over to...
But then he hears it's Jonathan. Yep. Like, do you know where Joyce is? And he's like, sitting right beside me, guys.
That's it. So at the police station, the receptionist prepares some ice.
I wrote secretary bitch. I don't know why I was so mean to her in my notes.
She was nice.
I don't know why I wrote that. I feel bad now and I have to just be honest.
Only love makes you that crazy, sweetheart, and that damn stupid.
This is so cute.
Wow. So Nancy puts ice on Jonathan's face while he's handcuffed, the way most romances start. The real ones. The ones that last.
No.
Nursing your boyfriend in the fucking clink.
When this lady, the receptionist as you call her, the secretary bitch, I call her for no reason because she never did anything wrong to me and I'm sorry that I called her that. When she says this stuff to Nancy and Nancy's like, no, it's not like that. And you watch Nancy walk over to him and the look on her face is just like she's looking at him different now. And she's like, oh my God, I think this guy like loves me. Mm-hmm. Like this is a thing. And it's so sweet that she like just looks at him completely different. And he's like, what's up? Like, what's going on with you? Nothing.
Well, not just that. He says he doesn't say it that flippantly. And I think this is important. And this shows you a little bit more about Joyce's character where he... Jonathan, Jesus.
How dare you?
This shows us a lot about Jonathan's character where he's handcuffed. He got into a fight. He had a guy say terrible shit to him, but he wants to know how she's doing. He's a sweetie pie.
I am in love with him.
He's a sweetie pie. He's thinking, he's always looking out for other people. We know that about his character based on every episode we've seen.
And Nancy is now looking at him in a different light, and it's very sweet. I ship them. Nanathan, as their couple name is now. Dean wants to murder me.
Christ.
I don't even care.
Eleven is eating all the waffles, all of them in Hawkins. She hears Mike shouting. We cut to Mike and Dustin looking for her. Troy and his dickhead friends show up with a switchblade, and Mike and Dustin beat feet. They get the hell out of there, which you can imagine is a good move. Were you, I think we both exclaimed, holy shit, when that kid popped open a switchblade.
Yeah, I did.
I was like, damn, this shit's escalating.
I really did. That was very concerning to me, and I know these kids are shitty kids, and I know us. I mean, nowadays, a kid's not going to walk around with a knife unless they actually plan to, like, slit somebody's throat. But I'm sure back then, kids did stupid shit all the time like that.
Sure.
Just like you could be, like, 16 and buy bullets in a store.
83.
But it's really, I don't know. It was just crazy to see. It was very jarring. So I was like, holy shit, like, this kid means business.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't unbelievable to me either. Like, no, I didn't feel
this
like
shit happened all the time.
I didn't at all feel like this is out of line. I felt like this is crazy shit and I'm concerned for my friends.
You guys don't think this is crazy, but I know a kid who carried a fucking 38 in his leather jacket at high school for like 2 weeks because he got jumped and beat up. And I'll never fucking forget it. I remember his name, which I don't want to really say, but I'll never forget it because I was friends with him. He opened his jacket pocket and I was like, holy shit, that's cool. And then I just went to history class. You know, it's just a different time, man. I don't know if that's good or bad. It just was a lot different.
Nowadays, you have to go through a metal detector just to get
into
high school.
I'll never fucking forget that shit. He didn't have bullets or anything, but I think he was trying to scare people if they went after him. Anyway, but I'm just saying like a lot of kids carried knives back in the day, didn't necessarily jam them into people, but it was more of a scare tactic. They were trying to humiliate them. And I didn't think he was going to actually stab one of them. But, you know, there you go.
In the chat, we make mention again to Stephen King. As per usual, Scott Cummings, it reminds me of the bad kids from It. Henry Bowers, I agree. It also made me think of It, as everything in the show makes me think of Stephen King.
Lone Star says, Dean, where'd you go to school? The Dangerous Minds High School. Yeah, our teachers would put their seats backwards. Been spending most of nights living in the gangster's paradise. That was us.
Oh my God.
I'm on knees saying prayers in the street light. No, it wasn't. Actually, it wasn't even that bad of a school, which is the funniest part about it. It was actually
good
pretty nice.
Good Lord.
All right. So we see Lucas tracking with his compass, which kind of spins wildly. And Lucas zeroes in on the spot, climbs a tree, scans the area with his binocs, and sees some official men.
Hawkins, Power and Light.
A satellite dish, some familiar trucks that he's seen lurking around, and including a deuce and a half, which is like a military transport vehicle, which was kind of crazy to see. So Lucas is getting some valuable intel.
Yeah. Mind you, Lucas just saw this Hawkins Power and Light truck outside his own house.
Correct.
And waved at the guy. And now he's seeing them at this lab where the compass is pointing towards north, the place that they were looking for.
I like it.
I mean, this must be concerning to him.
Yeah, and this is what's so... Fucking Lucas is a little badass. He sticks to his guns. He tries to get shit done, and I admire that. Dustin and Mike get caught after a brief standoff, and then Troy wants to know how did you do that nerdy science shit to me?
I know, he assumes it was science that made him pee himself.
Dustin says that their friend has superpowers. Troy will let him go, but first Mike has to jump into the water from the cliff.
The same place where Will supposedly fell and died. Very important. Mm.
Now, this is pretty crazy because Mike says, okay, Mike fucking... Well, first, Troy's friend bails. He's like, this is not a good idea because he knows.
Yeah,
he
has I appreciate a that mind. Troy's friend is logical. I don't know his name, so I called him Logical Friend in all of my notes.
Logical Friend 1 thinks this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Well, Mike walks to the edge of the cliff and just goes. This is Mike. This summarizes Mike rather quickly, doesn't it?
I thought you were going to post like a gif of Tommen from Game of Thrones.
Nope. This summarizes Mike because I think it shows his loyalty. It shows what he's willing to do for his friends. He's plunging to certain death. He has to logically think this is it. And even Dustin's like, don't do it. I don't need my baby teeth. Again, both kids so loyal to one another.
I know.
So much love between these kids. And Mike just fucking swan dives.
Yeah, he does.
Because he wants to protect his friend. He's doing the loyal friend thing, and that's what he does. And this goes back to Dustin and him saying, you're my best friend too.
Yes.
I'm going to jump off a cliff for you, dude.
So don't you ever say Lucas is my only best friend again after this.
So he jumps, but of course, Elle is there, levitates him back up. And then Elle has the greatest hard walk of all time.
Oh my God. I could watch this scene over and over again for days.
I'm sure it's a gif.
And then she goes. After she pushes Logical Friend and breaks Troy's arm.
Right. Logical Friend gets off light.
Obviously. Then the Terminator walks up. Floyd Fry says in the chat, yes.
Come with me if you want to live.
Exactly.
Dustin taunts them. She's our friend and she's crazy.
I love this.
Don't come back.
You better run. She's our friend and she's crazy.
She'll kill you.
So cute.
Awesome scene. And this is good stuff. This was the most nad-pumping scene of the series so far. It was awesome. I love the conviction in which Elle reluctantly uses her powers. And this goes back to what you said at the beginning of this podcast, which is she's making a decision. She's making a decision to use her powers for good. And when she steps down to save Mike and to rescue her friends, she uses her powers unhesitatingly to protect them. And it's awesome. And I think it says a lot about her character going forward. It was a pleasure.
I agree. Loved it.
Cut to Elle in the black space, walking up on the creature. She approaches it. She touches it. It whirls on her and screams. We hear a loud bang. And then the wall cracks and tumbles. We get the gate, which we then cut with her crying to Mike. I'm sorry, she says. I'm sorry for the gate. I opened it. I'm the monster. And Mike says, no.
Mike smiles.
You saved me. Do you understand? You saved me. Mike hugs her. Dustin jumps in, and we have the sweetest moment of the series thus far.
I literally almost cry every single time.
Oh, it's adorable.
Actually, just hearing Dean talk about it almost makes me cry. I love this. This is so emotionally well done. Mike's reaction, the way he smiles at her when she says she's the monster and she's so sad and so broken down, and he just smiles and he's like, no, Elle, you saved me. It's just so good. It's so good. This kid who plays Mike, I mean, the girl who plays 11.
Awesome.
We've already talked about how amazing she is. But just his smile and how genuine he is to her, it's so moving.
His last name is Wolfhard. I know that.
And his first name is Finn. And he's going to be an it. So that's literally makes him the greatest person I've ever known.
We wrap on the kids walking home and the man in the van radioing that he has eyes on them. We also see the state dude arming up. The state dudes arming up, getting to their vehicles. Lucas sees all this from his tree that he's perched
from
on.
From his tree.
We end on the kids at the back door of, I guess that's Mike's house. I'm not sure.
I don't know whose house they're going to. I don't know if it necessarily even matters. It's just, they're going into a house together and they're being watched.
Yes. The end. Boom. There you go. That's the end of the episode, guys. Chapter 6, The Monster. So, Jessica, why don't we do a couple of listener comments? I know I'm going to let you handle that tonight.
Sure, I'd love to.
And then we'll wrap with a couple final thoughts and we'll go from there. So, who do you got?
I have Hunter Balch.
Nice.
Did I pronounce his name right? I don't know. All I know is there's a cat in his profile picture, so he's cool in my book. He says, dang, this image here, the images of the three hugging. I was loving this show so much. Like a little flea, it tread the line between too much and not enough so delicately. When I saw What's His Nuts, Sorry. I binge watched in a day a few weeks ago and I've missed some podcasts because of timing and a Harry Potter audiobook. Jump off that cliff. The scales tipped too much into goofy sci-fi land and I was really bummed. This feeling lasted all of 5 seconds. Then I forgot about it. Holy dang. This may be my favorite moment in the series now.
Boom. Good stuff. Awesome.
I have more.
Okay. Go for it.
Next, Jamie Lomas, who could not do a blog this week but wanted to make his points. One, I really love the kids this episode. Lucas is still kind of annoying with his negativity, but he's so brave. I hope he doesn't get killed. He probably won't because I don't see Scott Gimple or Robert Kirkman in the credits. Get it? Yeah. Jamie Lomas is my spirit animal.
Shots fired. Shots fired. That is fucking gold.
So I was right about the monster being a dress type predator. Okay, did say something like that. But I think Nancy and Johnson's trap plan is dangerous. It's the loser's club role in this story to vanquish the monster. Remember the magic rock? I think Nanathan, hashtag, is going to be short one member pretty soon.
Oof.
He's so negative about death in this show. Three, Steve is the titular monster this episode. I was an idiot for liking him last week. What an asshole. P.S. I think Barb is alive, is going to save Will, and they'll both pop out of one of the vaginas into our worlds like horrific twins. Oh, and I still think Ella's done for. Again, with a negativity.
Up and down, this guy. Up and down.
God.
Good shit, Jamie, as usual.
Floyd Fry, quote. Oh, Floyd Fry's in the chat, too. Hey, Floyd.
Yeah, and we already did mention the fact that he brought up the Lost Boys thing.
Great. I'm going to read everything else he has to say, too.
Okay.
He says, quote, you read any Stephen King? End quote. The end of episode 5 and beginning of episode 6 are the first truly scary scenes. The delayed echo in Nancy's voice when she's in the upside down is extremely similar to the poltergeist audio from Carol Ann. Lucas's headband, we talked about that. I love the monster shopping hunting trip. He also says, so why is the monster coming for her? Does it have anything to do with when she's concentrating and using her powers and she's bleeding? About Elle. And then he says something inappropriate too, kind of.
Okay.
Should I read it?
Hi. It's an explicit rated podcast.
This is, by the way, Nancy was doing a little bleeding that night. Barb was nabbed too, wasn't she? Maybe the monster ran down with the red wings.
The red wings. There ain't no red. Wow. Jesus. Steve ain't got no red wings. He doesn't strike me as a generous lover. But I like your style, Mr. Fry. I like your style. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, those are my comments.
Awesome. Good stuff, guys. Thanks for writing in. If you want to write in, you can do it on social media or you can email us if you're not a social media person, hosts@libertystreetgeek.net. That's hosts@libertystreetgeek.net.
We will read your shit.
Jessica, final thoughts.
I want to go watch episode 7 right now. Right now. I love the show. I don't want it to be over. I can't believe it's only 8 episodes. I don't know. I said earlier that there's something about this show that is, it's special. It's unique.
Yeah,
it's unlike anything else. It makes me feel nostalgic and I don't know. It just makes me feel when I'm watching the show. And I know it sounds so stupid, but it's true. It's just really, really, I don't know, lovely.
Awesome. Wow. That was very, very insightful.
Shut up, Dean.
We have 2 episodes left and I'm looking forward to getting the groups together to trade information and to see how it's going to end. With the military guys gearing up at the installation, these security guys, I am concerned that this could end in a big smash 'em up type of situation. I don't want the scale to erupt into anything too big. I think the show is successful by maintaining a manageable scale and not making it this large, you know, shootout in a town somewhere. I hope they don't lose the reins on it. Based on people's reactions, I don't think that's going to happen. I hope they don't lose their grasp of the scope that they've established. And that's the only thing I'm a little concerned about, but not overly concerned because they've done such a masterful job so far. But that's all I really have to say too, other than I am looking forward to how this is going to play out. I do fear that we may lose somebody. I don't know. We might lose somebody next week and then have a pleasant finale. I don't know if this is based on the tonal approach of this entire show. I don't really see them ending it on a sad note. It's possible. I do know they were renewed, so that does change dynamics a little bit. I guess we'll find out. But I'm hopeful, and I am confident that they will end the show appropriately. And I, you know what's crazy is I don't know what that would be at this point. If you were to ask me what would be an appropriate ending, I would not have an answer for you because I don't know. I think that we might need to lose somebody, but I'm not sure who, to keep the stakes high, but I don't want this to be a sad ending because I don't find it to be a sad show. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right, I agree.
I think there might be some sadness that establishes growth and everybody comes out a little stronger. That's what I want to see mm-hmm. at the end of the show, I think, would be appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's all I have, really, for now. And I think we are going to get out of here. Do you have any last words to say to these people?
I just can't wait for the next episode.
Well, there you have it. All right, we are going to get out of here. Jessica, tell these good people good night.
Good night, good people.